Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Oh, I love hearing the sound of Vin. It makes me happy.
Welcome.
And
welcome back.
It also, you know, the Uke, of course.
Oh, the Uke.
And, you know, he's still going, man.
He is.
And I love to see the Brewers doing good because I really want him. Well, I don't necessarily want him to win a World Series, but, you know, go to the playoffs, you know, have a little fun. You know, he'd
love to hear him on national TV again.
Right. Yeah, that would mean that the Dodgers would be out of it. So, but we'll see. Maybe some
possible
catastrophic plane crash. Catastrophic, is that right? What word am I looking for? Yeah. Anyway, let's not go there. That's very dark. Anyway,
but maybe
I hear the Uke and I get happy. And Scully, man, it's, you know, I miss those days.
For sure. Well, maybe we should start today off with a bit of history.
Ooh.
History is great. So today, this is May 28th.
Memorial Day.
It is Memorial Day. May 28th. Marks the 2,500th meeting between the Chicago Cubs and the Pittsburgh Pirates. The first pair of teams to reach this mark.
They are the first team to reach that mark?
They are the first team to reach this mark. 2,500 games.
Not even the Dodgers, Giants? Because it seems like that's been going on for a long time.
It has been for a really long time, but the first meeting between these two teams was April 30th, 1887. 1887, April 30th, the Pittsburgh Pirates beat the Chicago Cubs 3-0.
Wow. So it's the 2,500th today. Let's see. Oh, okay. Yeah. Looks like. Yeah. Wow. The Dodgers are 2,472 with the Giants. Oh, yeah. So it's going to take a few more games then. A
few more games. A couple more seasons. We'll get there. But a few years behind these two teams. Two very old, proud franchises.
I think there's going to be a fight today. The game's going on as we speak, so we'll keep you updated on the fight and injuries for that matter. I'm pretty sure the umpires probably warned both sides before the game even started, just out of good measure. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, Facebook.
West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
Instagram.
We're not on Instagram yet.
Podomatic website, iTunes, leave a comment, send a concern, a question, a plea for help. We have a slight plea for help from, who is this from? P. Anderson asks, any thoughts on potential teams for Cole Hamels? Ooh. Well, I mean, he's with the team. He has a team.
His team is really good. Not looking like that team is going to be selling anytime soon.
Well, I think Texas will be dealing him at some point this season. I think they will. I don't think they're going to hold on to him. Why would they? I don't know. Maybe. The obvious choice would be Philly, I think. Philly's doing great. They could use, if they had him too, that'd be awesome. But, yeah, maybe a little old hat. I'm sure the fans would be happy. I don't know if he would. But, again, going to a first-place-ish team. We're just going to call him first-place-ish for now. I don't know how much longer it's going to last. But, you know, they are riding pretty high. They're doing a lot better than anybody in the West, that's for sure.
Dodgers might need a little bit of pitching.
Well, that's true.
Arizona might need a little bit of pitching.
Cole Hamels to the Dodgers? Well, he's got Chase Utley there. It's like 2008 nightmare all over again, man. I hate that team. It took me years to get to like Chase. You know, it's going to take me a little while longer to like Cole Hamels.
As soon as he pitches this shutout for the boys in blue, you'll like him.
Perhaps. Or if he takes out a guy in the playoffs and breaks his leg or something, you know. Like a goon, like a proper old man goon. I like that. No, but I'm thinking actually Yankees. I'm thinking Cole Hamels to the Yankees, because for the Yankees, that'd be the biggest boon. They, no pun intended, that would be pretty good, because they don't really have the solid pitching. I mean, they have Severino. He's legit. Sabathia's been doing surprisingly well. And Sabathia's great in the postseason, but it's still a long season to go. And the chances of Sabathia not being on the DL by the end of the year are slim to none. I probably have a better chance of winning the lotto tonight. I forgot Sonny Gray and Tanaka. Again, both guys that are very hittable. I'd be a little worried going into the postseason with just those guys. Again, Severino's fine,
yeah, but
bring a National League pitcher in there. Oh, it's a different story.
Could be, but talking about the Bronx Bombers redo, this is a very scary lineup. The pitchers don't have to be sub three to
really get
it done.
Well, if they put
really
up eight runs, sure, I guess, yeah. But, you know.
They're mashing the ball. It is pretty incredible to watch. They got so many just big boys just bopping home runs everywhere you look.
It is ridiculous. That team is pretty stupid. Good, I guess. Yeah, in a good way for them, I guess.
Can hear the collective groan from Red Sox Nation from here.
Is it the Yankees to lose? I mean, nobody's really even talking about Houston. We just assume Houston's going to do it, but I don't think that's an assumption that you can take.
Houston's definitely going to do it in the West. It's going to be a battle between the Yankees and the Red Sox.
I mean, for the pennant.
For the pennant?
Yeah.
I don't know. It might be a little bit too early to start talking about the pennant. We can talk about
division
races.
It's going to be one of those three.
Yeah, it's looking that way.
The
AL Central is definitely looking a little weak.
Oh, AL Central, we've already given them the crown of most garbage division. I say that as a National League West fan.
West Coast bias baseball podcast. What are you going to do? Of course, we're going to take the West over the AL Central.
I don't know. I think last year, and I'm sure everybody watching these games would agree that. Had New York had home field advantage for the ALCS, they would have won the pennant.
Yeah, it's
Houston
quite possible.
Houston got demolished every game
possible.
In New York. They weren't even the same team.
They got distracted by the pinstripes, like most teams.
And if the Yankees do finish with a better record, and we do have like a deja vu, another meeting between those two teams in the ALCS, I got to go Yankees. Although the pitching staff in Houston is ridiculous. It's somehow better than it was last year.
It is. I've been seeing some things being written about Houston pitching staff. They're calling it the best ever.
Get out of here. Come on. That's dope. No. I don't know if it's the best ever.
Statistically, they are far ahead of the pack.
They've ever had.
That is definitely true. And it may be very well the best this year. But best ever, that's definitely up for debate.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
What, this year?
What do you mean? Oh, of the year?
Yeah, this year, the best pitching staff this year.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The best in Houston history.
Oh, by far.
But
I don't even know Houston's history, and I'm just going to go ahead and say that, yeah, they're the best.
Nolan Ryan, Mike Scott.
Yeah, but
they had some good.
But Nolan Ryan's ERA was never as good as Verlander's and Cole's right now. It's just insane. And WHIP, and Nolan Ryan just wanted to strike everybody out every single time, which is super fun to watch if you're a fascist, I guess. But but that was it. That was all he ever wanted to do. I mean, I'm sure he wanted to win games, but I think even more than that, he wanted to strike dudes out, which is why he's like the ultimate badass on the mound.
Man.
There's no, I can't think of anybody tougher on the mound than Nolan Ryan. I mean, who would you least want to face? Because if something happens.
Well, Randy Johnson comes to mind.
That's true, but if you charge the mound on Johnson, you might be able to break him if you're a big guy. Ain't nobody going to break Nolan Ryan. He's going to put you in a headlock and give you, like you're his little brother. That's a big text, bro. I ain't messing with him. Randy Johnson is ugly. Randy Johnson gets the ugliest award, and he's scary to look at. And if I was having a nightmare, I wouldn't want to see him because he looks like some kind of Lemony Snicket character. But Nolan Ryan is just a dirty, dirty pitcher. He's nasty.
Yeah.
He would take your head off if he didn't like you. Yeah. Randy Johnson was a better pitcher, I think, but yeah.
Better pitcher even with
the Nolan Ryan? The, yeah. I mean, I'm pulling that out of my ass. I have nothing really, but we've got
you heard it here. Send your hate mail too.
Yeah, well, okay. Look, we've already talked about how Nolan Ryan's records will never be broken. Nobody will ever break his career strikeout record. It will never happen. It'll never happen. Plus his seven no hitters, yeah, in spanning 4 decades. I mean, that's just insane.
That's pretty crazy.
So many of those records will never be touched. And Randy Johnson has a perfect game. Does he have two? He has one perfect game. Does he have two no hitters? No, I don't remember. But either way, Randy Johnson also has a World Series. You know, he's Cy Young in two different leagues. I don't know. Randy Johnson is disgusting. Like nobody could hit that slider when he was at his peak. Nobody could. That thing was insane, you know. Now, for my money, I'm going to go Koufax if I have to pick one, you know, for if the game determines my life. But, or Satchel Paige, maybe. You know, we don't really have all the data there.
All good choices. All good choices. There's no doubt about that.
All right. Sorry for the fantasy hour. going to come back to reality. Phil Hughes to the Padres. How about that? Phil who? Yeah. Well, hey, you know, Phil Hughes has a pretty solid career. So he's he got DFA'd and then now he's heading to San Diego. So too is the 74th pick in next month's draft. Padres send catcher Yanningson Villalobos to the Twins. I don't really know rest. It looks like Twins will cover the rest of Hughes' 2018 salary, pardon me, and half of his 2019 cost, which is about $13 million. That's pretty nice. And 7 appearances this season, he made 2 starts. I honestly didn't even know he had 2 starts this year. 6.75 ERA. He began the season on the DL. He was an all-star with the Yankees in 2010. He set an MLB record with his 11.63 strikeout to walk ratio for Minnesota in 2014. Career, he has a 4.49 ERA, but you know, Phil Hughes is a good innings eater guy. I mean, I don't know. He might be in the bullpen. We'll see. I don't even know if they're good, but the Padres have like one of the best bullpens in baseball right now. It's kind of crazy. So maybe they just have him start.
Not that that's translating to many wins at this point.
No, but you know, you never know. They got, Haas and this, Framil Reyes guy can step up, and Jankowski seems to be actually hitting. He's hitting over 300, it seems like, this year. He was always kind of like a...
And their rookie, Carlos... Or not... Christian Villanueva.
Oh, right. That's right.
He is at 14 home runs and leading all Major League rookies.
Wow.
And home runs. And only, I believe, 2 behind Bryce Harper for the National League lead in home runs.
Yeah.
He is swinging it in the... pitcher-friendly ballparks of the NL West.
that's a joke. But I guess Arizona. But I mean,
Arizona, Colorado be the exceptions. But the one that he hardest, plays in the most,
yeah, Petco.
Petco Dodger Stadium is not known to be super hitter friendly, and of course AT&T Park.
Right, of course, the most pitcher-friendly park in all of baseball. Dodger Stadium is a pitcher's park as well, of course.
Especially at night.
Yeah. Speaking of that, that brings me to something weird. So the Dodgers won their 3rd consecutive series for the first time this year, finally. Yeah.
Amazing.
But the weirdest thing was, you know, Bellinger was slumping pretty hard. So I looked at the numbers, and because I was just wondering, because it seemed like he does really good, I thought, on... when he was hitting away. But what I realized is he actually does really well when he's in a day game, and he does not do well in a night game. And it maybe has something to your point about playing a lot of games in LA at night, which most of the games are. In 15 day games this year, Bellinger is batting .339. But in 37 night games, he's batting .212. Last year, he hit .291 in the day and .258 at night. There's a huge discrepancy there. That's over 50 points right there.
So
day and night.
Bellinger ever left L.A., would he want to go to Chicago then? Go to the Cubs?
Because they play a lot of day games.
They play a lot of day games compared to the rest of the league.
It's cold there for the first couple of months. First few months, probably. I don't even know. Yeah, maybe. That's if I was a scout or if I was the GM or whatever for Cubs, or I don't know if any other teams are as traditional as the Cubs. Are there? I wonder. I'm sure the Cubs lead all of baseball in day games.
Yeah, well, they have. There, as far as I,
they got lights only like in the 90s or something.
That
right?
That neighborhood, yeah, that neighborhood still has ordinances that limit the number of night games that can be played at Wrigley because of the light pollution.
Wow.
It's a very residential neighborhood around
there.
It is.
It's just right smack in the middle of
town. So you got those big ballpark lights that, you know, makes it daytime bright for blocks around.
Yeah.
So there are ordinances that limit the number and days at which Cubs can play night games. It was one of the concessions that were made when they did put the light standards up at Wrigley.
Well, I don't want to even consider an option of Bellinger going to the Cubs.
Well, no.
They already have a first baseman in Chicago. But Bellinger's also a solid outfielder. You know, I mean, that kid can fly. He's a first baseman just because he's so tall and lanky, and you know, Dodgers have a lot of outfielders, but he still plays the outfield occasionally. That would be a huge improvement for any team. And that just those numbers are freaking me out, man. 339 this year.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That 212. That's an interesting stat.
And yeah, it's 15-37 in terms of night games to day games to night games, and I really hope that this isn't a trend. But based on last year's numbers, it looks like it's probably going to be. So I don't know. It's good for San Francisco, I guess, if they just get him up here playing a night game, should be able to chop him down pretty easily. It's strange. I guess it's the lights. It's a different atmosphere. Maybe. I don't know. You have more time to eat garbage food maybe during the day. I'm assuming all these guys have like nutritionists, but you never know. I remember Agon used to go to this little taqueria right by Dodger Stadium. He said he would go before every game, every home game. I don't know if that's true. What is it? El Guisado? I don't know. I forget now. But you know, and he seemed to do all right. So I don't know.
Gotta have a taco. Gotta have a taco.
But I would imagine your diet has a huge, it has a lot to do with your performance.
Well, sure, but I don't know if it does as much as the way that the ball flies with the marine layer.
Well, the way you're feeling, the quickness of your body. You know, your bat speed might slow down a tick or something if you're full or if you're stomach ache or if you ate too many carbs or some shit. I don't know. Brian Dozier, last year, beginning of last year, you know, he started just swinging a hot bat, and he says it's because I guess 2 years ago now, he hired a nutritionist. He completely cut out fried foods from his diet, and he said it's just night and day, and his performances the last couple of years have definitely proven that. I mean, the guy's hit over 35 home runs the last like few years in a row. And he looks better, you know. He says he feels better. I think if I was a professional athlete, I would just try to do the best you can, right, or the best I could.
Well,
to stay
especially
healthy.
If you're making multi millions of dollars to play this wonderful game, you gotta have your body performing at peak all that you can, without any illegal substances.
Right. And you have the rest of your life to get fat and lazy. You know, right now you have an opportunity that very, very few
people
do.
Create generational wealth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, take one for the team and for yourself, literally, you know. Anyway, speaking of injuries, Acuna. Ooh, he's down. Acuna down. That was just hard to watch as well. In case you didn't see, go check out that video, or don't, because it's disturbing. He hit the ground after his left leg buckled. Right after the first base bag, it wasn't even on the bag. You know,
no, it wasn't on the game.
He was trying to appeal. See, let this be a lesson to the rookies out there. Let the umpire do his damn job. Don't try to appeal or
convince,
argue. Yeah,
certainly, if you're going to do it, don't turn your torso towards the ump and do it. Most of the vets who do that run through the bag and just facing forward, give the safe sign and stop as normal. He turned his body, caught his cleat,
contorted.
And,
yeah.
Oh,
It was terrible. In case you didn't see, he ran through the bag. He was fine. He looked all right. He might have been out by a tick. And then he turns to the umpire and then does the motions the safe sign. And then his left leg buckles because he forgets that he's mid-run. I mean, that's literally what it looks like. It's like he forgot what he was doing for a second. Left leg buckles. He does like a flip, tumbles through the air. He got placed on the 10-day DL today with sprained mid-left ACL sprain, contusions to the left knee, and contusion to the lower back. That's your core, man. That's tough. That's everything right there. That's how you hit.
And depending on what happens, that this kind of injury, while maybe relatively minor today, could possibly plague him for the rest of his career.
Sure. Oh, yeah. That's sore back for the next 10 years, the next rest of your life.
Been looking like a very promising career as well.
Yeah, he's only 20 years old, so he might spring back. He's hitting .265. 326 OBP, 453 slugging with 7 doubles, 5 homers, and only 29 games. That's pretty damn good. Well, one of his tools might have been taken away now, his speed. We'll see. I'm sure he'll be fine. It's just a sprain, but whenever I hear ACL or MCL, I'm just like, ooh, that's...
And then lower back.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, lower back. That, I mean, yeah, like you said, like that could be a permanent thing that'll linger the rest of your life, and that's a tough way to do it in your 29th game and in the majors. Clayton Kershaw hasn't pitched since May 1st. He will look to be getting off the DL on Thursday against the Phillies. That should be good. Mookie Betts scratched before Sunday's game. Left side tightness. He's not in the lineup today either. And
major league leader in home runs, benched for the moment.
He's got 17 home runs. He also has 13 steals. He's hitting .359. I mean, he's slugging .750. It's just insane. I still think he got robbed 2 years ago for the MVP instead of Trout. I think Mookie's numbers were better, and he was on a better team. And I know that I don't think that necessarily should matter if your team wins or not for an individual award, but I know that the writers look at that and they were a much better team than the... Anyway, I just said that because he won me a championship that year. But, his numbers were insane. But this year, his numbers are like video game numbers. This year, they're even better. Yeah. It's nuts. Miggy, still out with that right hamstring strain. He could come back the upcoming homestand. He's been on the DL since May 4th. But he was batting .323, .407, .516. I had him on my team for a while. I mean, I drafted him pretty late in the draft. I figured, hey, if he's... I know he's not going to have the power, but he still hits for average. He's still got like one of the best eyes in baseball. I did drop him, though. I had to get rid of him. Looks like the first place guy in our team picked him up. Hmm. See how that goes, Kizzle. Good luck with that. All right. And by the way, I know you're listening. And I tried to trade. I tried Encarnacion for Goldschmidt. And anybody listening to this understands that I think they would take that in a heartbeat, right? Encarnacion has 11 home runs. He's not batting .300, but it's Encarnacion. He's going to finish with 40. He's going to have 100 RBIs. He's going to lead the team. He's on one of the best teams in the AL. Goldschmidt is just abysmal. I don't know what's going on over there, man. It's scary, actually, because it doesn't really make sense. I saw Harold Reynolds breaking it down a little bit, how Goldschmidt isn't laying his bat on his back or on his shoulder. You know, he has like that posy stance kind of where he almost lays the bat the opposite way, facing down toward the ground, and then right at the last second snaps it in. But he's not doing that this year, and it's much to his detriment. I mean, he is not seeing the ball. He looks fooled on everything.
Is it because of being able to see the ball, or is it a timing mechanism thing?
Both. I'm assuming it's both. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? You know, if you drop your if you hold your shoulders up even a quarter of an inch or centimeter. I mean, if it's different than how you've been doing it your entire career. Goldschmidt, to his credit, he said, "Hey, look, I try different things. I always try different things." That's what he said. He said he always, changes his stance, but I don't know, man. I've seen Goldschmidt a lot, especially in the National League West, and he pretty much always has that same stance, same nice, tight, compact swing for a big dude, which is why he can hit for average. And he's not, he doesn't hit 40 home runs, but he always hits, 29, 30, 35 home
runs. And he always seems to hit him against the Giants.
And the Dodgers.
And the Dodgers.
But not this year.
Maybe he misses Tim Lincecum and,
I mean, he,
and
he
Matt
has a few.
Kane.
He has a few home runs, but they all just look like you know, hanging curveballs that he just ran into kind of thing. Like, he's striking out. You know, he's leading the National League in strikeouts. Goldschmidt, it's crazy. Sorry, I'm getting excited. It's just, it's nuts.
It is a little nuts.
Even if he hits 300 the rest of the year, he's still going to finish the year at like 360 because he's hitting like 205 or something. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. I've never seen it. So anyway, I offered the trade, but you know, he didn't take it, and now I'm actually kind of like, yeah, it's probably better off. But that's only because I like Goldschmidt. You know, again, I've seen him play many, many times. The guy is a consummate professional. You know, he's a lot like Joey Votto, who I just love watching him. I mean, Joey Votto's probably the toughest at bat in baseball. There's nobody he's just insane. It's like he doesn't make mistakes. It's crazy. Anyway. anyway, Chris Davis, he's been on the DL since Monday with a strained right groin. Took batting practice for the first time on Sunday. He says he's like 100%. You know, he still has 13 homers. He's fun to watch because he's a little guy. Or he's not a little guy, but you know, if you saw him on the street, he would just look like a normal dude. He wouldn't look like a guy that hits 42 home runs. Darvish, 10-day DL, right tricep tendonitis. Man,
there's a lot of that going around in the league.
Andrew Miller, right knee inflammation. That might have been more of a blessing, I think. Just get him out of the lineup.
Well, what happened to the Indians bullpen in general? They were their strength last year. It carried them to 103 wins this year.
Well, it's because of Miller. If you don't have that guy that could eat two innings or two and a half innings or three, sometimes they bring him in, you know, for the sixth, and he goes 6, 7, 8. If you don't have that guy in there, you're going to be taxed.
So he's the anchor, hasn't been quite right all year, and that's why the rest of the bullpen stinks?
I think it has residual effects, yeah, I do. I think him not being able to get guys out is just really... they haven't really had to be used. Their bullpen hasn't been used as much since he's... You know, I mean, he was lights out. He was arguably the best reliever in baseball. I mean, he never got saves or anything, but... Man, they bring him in like in all those postseason games, and he's just unhittable. It's just he's kind of like a Randy Johnson up there, you know, super dirty. That's tough. Yeah, no, that's a huge reason why I think the Indians aren't doing as well as they should be. Of course, they'll win the AL Central. I don't think that. Well, you know, I don't want to rule out the Twins, but
the division seems still to be quite wide open.
Yeah, Miller, man, it's crazy. I like Miller, especially in our league, because in our league, we do saves slash holds, and Miller's ERA is always like under one. His K per nine is always like in the 13s or 14s, but this year he has a 4.40 ERA in only 14 innings.
Wow.
Yeah. How about Bummy? What you got about Bumgarner coming back?
Bumgarner coming back, he had a dominant performance. Struck out 8 of 12 batters in three
innings.
And a third innings.
Yeah.
At a Triple A start in Sacramento. Looks to be on track. As soon as he gets that stamina up, I expect to see him back. AT&T Park.
How many pitches that was? Eight strikeouts, only 12 batters.
I did not see a pitch count. But well, I did see eight struck out 8 of 12.
So he's going to get a couple more rehab starts.
Probably just to build up some stamina so he can get up to 80-100 pitches.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that'll be fun.
It will be good. It looks like a lot of the Giants are starting to get healthy off the DL. Come back.
What about Joe Panic?
Joe Panic, the last news I saw about him was that he was going to be starting some rehab starts this coming week.
So it's just a left thumb sprain. It wasn't It wasn't super damaging, I guess. I thought it was going to be worse. I guess they're going to shave a couple weeks off the 6 to 8 week timetable. So yeah, maybe he'll only miss like a month and a half.
Some good news. And so Pablo Sandoval starting at second base won't be too long of an experiment.
Cespedes finally began running. doing like a little exercise. You know, he's got that strained right hip flexor. I really need him to come back. you know, he's batting 255, 316, 474. He has 8 home runs in 37 games, though, so could really use him back. T. Gordon took some ground balls, a little pregame infield work. We'll see. I don't know. You know, he's got the broken right big toe, and that's tough for D because, I mean, speed is his thing, you know. I don't know. I don't really know. Toe injuries is nothing you can do. You can't even put a cast on it. You just got to sort of wait it out, right?
But a break is much easier than a sprain in a lot of cases because, you know, you just got to wait for that bone to heal. Much easier to tell when that bone is healed rather than a strain or a sprain.
That's where, true. That's true.
Yeah. Healing can be a little bit deceptive. Not sure when you're quite ready, strong enough to continue moving that particular joint muscle that the injury is associated with.
Did you happen to catch that Angels Yankees Otani Tanaka?
I did see some of that matchup. It was we're hoping that he was actually going to start in New York, but he ended up not.
But he started as a batter.
As a batter, yes.
You know, they had met in 2013, so this was their first meeting playing against each other since Japan 2013. Otani, he worked the count full against Tanaka.
He did draw a walk against him.
Yeah, he whiffed on a low and away in their first meeting. And then in the fourth inning, he drew a walk on 5 pitches. But then in the sixth, Tanaka jumped ahead 1-2 count before striking him out in that splitter. I mean, Otani knows the splitter's coming. What's he doing? You just go down there and dig it out or just don't swing, bro? You know what he's going to throw you.
Well, that's the easier thing about it. It's much easier than that. That's the thing about that pitch that makes
that's
it
the
so
pitch that
difficult.
He uses too. I know, but every Japanese pitcher has that pitch. And it's dirty.
It is.
So don't swing. You know, it's not going to be a strike.
But the thing about the theory behind that pitch is that it comes to you.
Looks like a strike.
It looks like it's just a normal fastball. So you commit to swing and the bottom falls out.
It's dirty. It looked like Tanaka looked really good against him. I think he sort of brought out the best in him. But Otani remains hitless in his career against Tanaka. He faced him in his final season in Japan. Otani went 0-for-11 with 6 strikeouts, 1 walk and 1 hit by pitch.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's Tanaka's his kryptonite, so to speak, I guess. I don't know. Well, you know, that splitter.
No, Tanaka is good pitcher. He wouldn't be in pinstripes
Tanaka's
if he
pitcher.
Wasn't.
That's true. He is. He's not, you know, he's not an elite pitcher, but he's a solid pitcher.
Definitely above average.
Right. And nowadays, you know, being a solid pitcher is almost just as good as being an elite pitcher because it seems like the elite pitchers don't last, right? Like you think of like an Arrieta. I don't know. I mean, Arrieta's doing pretty good. I don't really have any complaints, but his strikeouts aren't there at all. He's just not fooling anybody. He's pitching a contact, which is fine. I mean, he's getting wins, but, you know, not the best for fantasy. What are you going to do? I have a one-track mind, as you can clearly see. How about Altuve? Hey, Altuve,
hey.
Finally, come on.
10 hits in a row?
Yeah, yeah. He, after going hitless in 12 straight plate appearances, he tied the game at 3 on Sunday with an RBI single in the 8th, capping off 10 straight hits over 3 nights. It's pretty damn good. Now,
it is. That's amazing how that law of averages works, right? 0-for-12 and then a 10-for-10 later on in the world.
Now let's hope for 10 home runs in a row because I need to get that three total home runs. I need to get that up. I need to inflate that a little bit.
His power numbers will come, I think. 10 home runs in a row, probably not.
Hey, not with that attitude, all right? Now, I thought I remembered a time in the recent history where Ethier had a similar streak. I thought he had like 9 or 10. So I looked it up for your sake so you don't have to do it. I'm talking to everybody here.
Thank you. I appreciate
yes.
it.
All right.
Yes.
Indeed, Andre Ethier did get 10 straight in 2012. Yeah. Captain Clutch, man. He also had a 29-game hitting streak, I think, or 31-game hitting streak. I think it might have been that same year. Man, I miss Ethier. What are you going to do? But I was going to have this trivia question, but nobody's going to get this because it's just ridiculous. But who was the – do you know what the record is for consecutive hits?
No, I do not.
It's 12.
12,
so
okay.
The Houston record was 8, set by Altuve. And then now he broke his own record and it's 10. But the all-time record is 12 consecutive hits. Pinky Higgins.
Pinky Higgins.
Of the
what
Boston Red Sox.
Name.
Yeah, it is a good name. That guy's used to have really good names. Well, we still have some good names, like Socrates Brito. And that guy's still going. That's a pretty good name. Arizmendi Alcantara. I think that's a pretty sweet name. I don't know if that guy's playing as a Padres guy. Anyway, Pinky Higgins of the Red Sox back in 1938 set the record at 12 consecutive hits. Then, in 1952, Walt Dropo hit 12 in a row with the Tigers. Dropo, he actually ended up being a Red Sox. So Red Sox seem to have this luck. But he was a Tiger when he did it. But even though they both made 12 hits in a row, Pinky Higgins also had 2 walks mixed in. So technically,
they weren't
Dropo's.
It wasn't necessarily consecutive.
Right, exactly.
Just,
so they were, but they were
consecutive at bats, but
yeah,
not
plate
appearances.
It doesn't count as an AB, technically.
Right. But so, it does count as a plate appearance.
Right. So even though, you know, the sources will say both of those guys have the record, only Dropo holds the record for consecutive hits without a walk. 12. That's pretty intense. I think 9 of those he had straight were singles. And then he flied out on his 13th, and then on his 14th he hit a triple, I think. So he would have broke the record had he got that triple on his 13th. But hey, what are you going to do? That's baseball. Yeah, so Altuve, keep it going, buddy. Okay, cuz you know what? I need a win this year. I know everybody in the league's laughing cuz I'm doing terribly, but my team is doing terribly. I'm managing the shit out of that team, okay? it's just everybody's like,
you can only
infirmed.
Play the cards that you're dealt, huh?
You know, I'm climbing up. I'm climbing back. I've never been this low. It's just weird. I feel weird being down in the dregs. So, you know. But hey, that's the game, and that's
yeah.
There's
still a long way to go, and anything can happen.
That's right. Yeah, don't forget that. All right, well, where were you?
Bueller. Bueller.
There we go.
Bueller.
Yeah, huh?
Bueller.
How about Walker Bueller?
Bueller.
Looking good, man. Looking good. He was out of the get on Sunday. Granted, he's played the Padres. It seems like he's always just playing the worst teams. But he kept them to 4 hits, 7 innings, 6-1, you know, 6-1 Dodger win. You know, we've won 8 of the last 10. But Bueller's looking hot, man. He's looking dirty. He struck out 8 without a walk. Actually, Dave Roberts was talking about him, and he was sort of giving comparisons to one of your favorite pitchers. Who would that be?
One of my favorite pitchers?
Mm-hmm. I think. Maybe not. Maybe it's not one of your favorite pitchers. But here's what Dave Roberts had to say about Bueller.
All right.
Lincecum. I think that it's not the split change that Tim had, but the body type, the wiry, but there's strength in there, the flexibility, athleticism. The poise, the confidence. I had a chance to play with Tim as a rookie, and so there's some similarities there for me with that.
That power from a sort of tight spot, and like that super crazy spinning curveball. I want to see, and he's got like 4 pitches. You know, this is what they're saying about Bueller that even Kershaw didn't have, or Koufax for that matter, when they first started.
Right.
You know, those guys. I mean.
Does it come up with two maybe yeah. 3, and then develop a third and
right.
fourth while in the bigs?
Yeah.
Because they realize they need them, and it's not just stuff, just try to hit my fastball, here's my curve, good luck.
Exactly.
You got to have
actually working them, yeah.
That's great. That's big praise. I actually have not really seen Bueller pitch so much this year. I haven't had a true opportunity to watch him pitch, but I will I will take note and see if I can see some of those similarities.
48 strikeouts and 41 innings. The 3-1 record, 2.2 ERA. He hasn't issued a walk in his last four starts.
That's pretty good, considering his first name is Walker.
That's pretty good. But, you know, so for fantasy purposes, he's probably taken in every league. I would imagine that he is. If he's not, stash him, because it looks like, you know, there were some questions on limiting his pitch count. You know, Dave, or his inning count, essentially. I think he had 98 innings in 2017. But Dave Roberts is saying, you know, hey, we're going to let him do, you know, we're going to let him play pitch as long as he feels good. And as long as he keeps pitching well, hey, you know, we're going to keep him in there. So for fantasy purposes, I think you'll be able to get at least 5 innings from this guy every start. It's seeming like now. It's really even look like he's going to get all these quality starts, too. So go ahead and stash him. Mark my words, while I watch, he's probably going to shit the bed in his next start. Send your emails to baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Attention of Samuel. If you don't like this advice, if you do like it, send it to me. Okay. I'll take the credit.
Got to take the credit. Got to take the blame.
Is that how it works?
But, dude, if you truly, though, if you do have any questions regarding fantasy, do send us an email at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com and podomatic.com, West Coast Bias Baseball, and
that's right.
Facebook. Find us as well at West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
Now, and this may be obvious to most people listening and or, you know, already knew about, but Alex Reyes, St. Louis, he's coming back. He is going to be making a start on Wednesday against the Brewers. He is looking dirty.
St. Louis is sitting at 28-22, 4 games behind Milwaukee. Is St. Louis going to make some noise this year in the NL Central?
Well, hopefully.
It's looking like a pretty strong division as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will, but Carlos Martinez is going to be coming back. And as I said, Alex Reyes is coming off of a couple minor league rehab starts where he struck out 44 over 23 scoreless innings. So it was only a question of when, not if. And so now, with him back, you know, that Miles Mikolas guy, he's been tearing it up. I know he got, you know, he gave up like 4 runs or something yesterday, but he was looking really good. He's had every single start. It's been a quality start, which is pretty rare. They got Jack Flaherty, Luke Weaver, Michael Wacha, and then, yeah, again, when Martinez returns. So he's, you know, they're going to be pretty good. So Alex Reyes, I'm sure he's taken in your league. If he's not, get him because, I mean, you know, you might want to bench him maybe against his first start. I don't know, though. I mean, they are playing the first place team, best record in the National League against, you know, the Brewers. But, I mean, his numbers are looking crazy, Alex Reyes, and and he's looking healthy. He missed 2016 Tommy John surgery, but I mean, this guy throws gas, and he's filthy. So if he can translate that to the majors, whew, you got like a bona fide ace coming up right now. So you heard it first again. Well, you probably didn't hear it first. You probably already knew about Alex Reyes. But check out Alex Reyes, St. Louis Cardinals. What else you got?
What else I got? You know, not... Not a whole lot left. I know back to the Yankees lineup. Got a bunch of mashers. Saw ran across one thing that Giancarlo Stanton has more strikeouts than walks and hits combined so far this year.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It sounds about right.
But their rookie, Torres.
Yeah, Gleyber Torres.
Gleyber Torres before this weekend, hit home runs in 4 straight games, becoming one of the youngest players to do that. Joining a fairly elite group of some players that we've already mentioned in this here podcast.
Nolan Ryan?
No, Nolan Ryan is not one of them. I don't think he even gave up home runs in 4 straight games.
Probably not.
But no, Miguel Cabrera.
Sure.
Giancarlo Stanton. Albert Pujols. And Andrew Jones were among the five youngest players.
They did it when they were around. So,
very young.
So all those guys are the youngest that have ever done it.
Right. Hit four home runs in four straight games.
Probably their rookie seasons then, I'm assuming.
Probably. I was not able to confirm that particular stat. That they were all in their rookie year when they achieved a home run straight games.
That's good company right there.
It is pretty good company. A couple of Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers, and should be Hall of Famers.
You know, the Yankees young prospects that have coming up, they're proving their muster,
Yankee,
man.
Yankees have some good scouts. There's no doubt about that.
So far, so good for them.
Then the other thing that I wanted to talk about is a new potential strategy in the realm of pitching in the major leagues.
The new stat, which isn't technically a stat yet, but the new role for a pitcher.
The opener. Not the closer, not the setup man, but the opener.
The opener. Now, this is interesting. Now, this could only happen in the post-Bill James world and the StatCast and, you know. It's great. I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. I think...
isn't it something like most runs scored are in the
first
inning?
The first inning is the highest scoring inning in baseball. So...
And why is that? Because the pitcher has a little bit of adrenaline, hasn't settled in, not hitting his mark.
I don't know. Maybe it's the pitcher likes to get ahead of the batters, and then especially on the first time around. So yeah, you'll probably be seeing more strikes. And a lot of times pitchers don't bring out their secondary or tertiary pitches until second time around or so, because they're trying to fool guys.
Save something for later.
Here's my fastball. Here's my cut fastball. That's all I'm going to show you. And then third inning. Oh, wait. I actually have a slider and a changeup. I don't know. I'm assuming. I'm sure the analysts actually have a reason behind that besides my layman's terms. But yeah, the first inning is the highest scoring inning in the game. So
why bring in a specialist to take on this role? I mean,
the batters off. And it worked. The first three times they tried it. With Romo coming in, pitching inning and a half, scoreless. Angels were pissed. Angels were not happy. I think the Angels were the first team to be the
victim of that no-dot slider in the first inning.
And then Romo's coming out there. He's coming out hot, just spinning that slider. And, you know, Romo used to be a closer, obviously.
Yeah, he was a closer for a year. He was a setup man for several years with
the Giants.
So he's
used to the pressure.
Yeah,
and the
excitement and coming in, big moment in the game. First inning is a big moment
in
the game.
It's relatable. It is. Yeah, exactly. I think so. So, you know, it happened. There's a lot of people that were pissed. A lot of, baseball purists. Look, I consider myself a traditionalist when it comes to baseball. I don't know. A purist. I don't know. Whatever. But that's only when it comes to rule changes. I don't want to see any damn rule changes, you know. In that sense, I'm as traditional as it gets. But... in terms of strategy, hey, you know, if you figure out a new strategy to win a game, do it. You know, I mean, why wouldn't you? Especially if you're in last place, you're not going to win your division, but you can maybe bolster your win loss record so you don't look completely abysmal. You don't look terrible when the season ends, and you're trying something new. Hey, you know, they don't really have a lot of good. They don't have any aces except for Archer.
Trend's got to start somewhere.
Got to start somewhere, but Sunday's bullpen day did not go quite as well. The plan was to use Romo against the Orioles, of course. Unfortunately, making his fourth start in 9 days, he couldn't get out of the opening frame. I think he only got one out for the second day in a row. So it hasn't really worked. He walked Pedro Alvarez, gave up consecutive hits to Machado and Scope to load the bases, and then he came out with just one out. So it's interesting. You know, obviously the kinks aren't out of it.
And from a win-loss perspective, I know you don't like the win-loss stat any sort of measure.
Yeah, it's,
but
it's not indicative.
So if you're the opener, Sergio Romo in this case, he is he is possible in this case to get a loss, being giving up runs in the first inning, but not in any way eligible for a win, no matter what happens in the game.
That's interesting.
So
that's interesting.
If you give up the losing run in the first inning, you have the loss.
Reason why wins and losses are the worst way to measure a pitcher.
Especially now, if this will ultimately become a thing, time will tell if the opener will become a thing. But
it is to an extent in postseason ball. When a do or die situation, right? One game to determine everything. Sure. That's all games are like that.
2014 World Series comes to mind. Game 7.
Exactly. Bumgarner.
Well, Bumgarner, he came out, but Affelt got the win, coming in relief in, I believe, the second inning.
You got to throw it all out there. You're trying to win, and that's why I like it, and that's also why it's not sustainable. But, I mean, at least not every day, but maybe a couple days a week.
It doesn't have to be the same pitcher time.
No, that's true. I mean, it's not sustainable in the sense that, look, I think there is no game that's more important than today. I mean, today is all that matters. Tomorrow doesn't exist. Yesterday is yesterday. So you got to win. You got to look at every game like this is it. Realistically,
there's 162
teams aren't
going to
do that.
Games.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I like the idea. I like kicking them when they're down. I like, competing. I don't like when guys sort of take a day off or whatever. We're not going to try as hard today. No, that's bullshit. Anyway, again, it's going to be way too taxing on the entire team if you do that every single game of the year. But yeah, hey, maybe a couple of days. And we already see bullpen days.
Sure, we do. But it also depends on the next guy. If this is your traditional starter who is conditioned to go 6-7 innings, comes in the second inning and goes 6-7 innings, doesn't necessarily qualify for a quality start because he didn't start the game.
Right.
But
he can still get the win.
He still get the win, and you're not like a full bullpen day. You have someone in the first, you have a pitcher through second through the eighth, and then you have your closer. You're usually only using three pitchers, which is, starter starts the game, goes 6-7 innings, get it set up, got the closer, still using only three pitchers.
Right. So it's really only offending individual stats because wins are the only thing that mattered. And I don't mean wins by a pitcher. I mean winning
wins by
for
the team.
Right.
That's what counts when it comes to who
that's
goes
why
to the postseason.
That's why they're all playing, right? They're all playing to win games. They're all playing to pad their own stats. And so,
and if they are, then those players get called out pretty quick.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of guys are doing that, of course, especially when they're on poor teams. But, I don't know. I'm not losing any sleep. I'm not shedding any tears for these maybe forgotten stats or stats that will maybe become obsolete. Or if anything, it just highlights how unimportant wins and losses are for a pitcher.
In my opinion, there was a time though.
There's a historical precedent. Yeah, no, I know. Well, when you would finish your own game, you would start and then finish your game. If you had to give the ball to the manager, that was like a huge insult to your sentimental. Your sentimentality. I don't know. What
manlyhood.
Your manlyhood. Yeah, exactly.
It's a macho thing for sure.
Oh, definitely. I mean, guys started games, they finished them. And in that sense, that's a win. That's pretty cool. But that doesn't happen anymore. We'll get maybe 20 complete games in the entire season combined throughout the entire both leagues. But again, I like the idea. And again, the Angels were not happy. Here's what Cozart had to say.
I don't think that's good for baseball, in my opinion. Usually you have a starter, you're like, okay, I'm going to get 3 at-bats off this guy probably. So you can kind of use the first at-bat. You want to have success, but you want to see what he has if you haven't faced him before, stuff like that. But when you're going spring training style, it's definitely a different ballgame. It's spring training. That's how I can describe it. So
Spring training ball. It
sounds like sour grapes to me.
Well, you know, and that's what he's saying. It's tourney ball. So it's tournament baseball. So like the World Baseball Classic, that's how it works. You know, you bring out your best guys to win the game. It is sour grapes because they lost. They lost both of those games, and he was pissed. And it's like, come on, dude. Like, I look, Cozar. You know, I respect him. He's a great player. You know, he's a great hitter. But it's like, yeah, dude, they don't, he's complaining. He's like, yeah, you know, usually I like to get a good look at the pitcher in the first go. Yeah, but the pitcher doesn't want you to. The pitcher isn't here to help you.
No.
He's not here to let you see him so that you can get a hit out.
No, matter what, no matter what, whether the starter goes 5-6 innings and you get 3 at bats on him, or he only goes 1-2 innings and you only get the 1 at bat against him. He's still trying to get you out.
Yeah,
you still got to try to hit that ball.
Cozar forgot about that part.
You can't whine because you struck out in the first inning. You might have struck out if you faced him 3 times.
It's pretty good. That's funny. Yeah, so I like that. I like when guys get, you know, sort of thrown off their game a little bit. It's good. It's good for the game, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. Shake it up. Get out of your routine.
Does that tie into this week's trivia question?
Well, it does, actually. Exactly. You mentioned it. Romo started 4 games in nine days. That's something that has not happened in a while, but it has happened before.
The 4 starts in 1 week or 9 days?
9 days.
Wow.
9 days, basically a week and a half. So... Who was the last pitcher to start 4 games in 9 days?
Who was the last pitcher to start 4 games in a 9-day period? Well, I think I jumped the gun a little bit because we forgot to answer last week's trivia question.
Well, while you chew on that question, we will now ask and answer last week's.
So we got an answer here from... Terrible 2.
This was related to Gerrit Cole striking out 5 times in 1 game.
That's right.
The question was, who was the last American League pitcher to strike out 5 times
in 1 game?
The last
American League pitcher to strike out 5 times in 1 game to get to Stanton, essentially.
Right.
Wow. Okay. All right. So this is tough. Now, I'm assuming... Well, okay, so we got from Terrible 2, I don't know where they're from, says Pedro Martinez. Ooh.
Pedro Martinez, huh. That's interesting. He did definitely play in the...
There weren't a lot of interleague games.
Interleague era, though.
Yeah, there were some, but not as many as there are
not
now.
As many. I think Pedro Martinez, while a reasonable guess, is a little bit too... too modern.
Maybe too modern. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Definitely, I think it would have to be someone before the designated hitter rule.
Looks like we got Marcus L. says Whitey Ford. Now, that's a decent guess.
That is a decent guess.
Pretty good.
That's
pre-DH.
It is pre-DH.
Yankees. That's not bad.
But no, it's not Whitey Ford.
Ooh, 0 for 2. All right. Well, that is it. No winners.
This was
no dinners.
No winners, no dinners. So sad. But
is it around that time though? I have no answer. I have no guess here.
This was a difficult question because the player who achieved this dubious achievement, if you could call it that, is fairly obscure. He only actually started in 12 games.
Really?
For the Boston Red Sox.
The Red Sox are all over this episode.
April 20th, 1969. Wow. Yeah, we're supposed to be a West Coast
podcast. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know.
I think we're all just in misery over here. But
so April 20th, 1969. Ray Jarvis of the Boston Red Sox struck
Who
out
the hell is Ray
5 times in 1 game. Exactly.
Wow.
Which is what makes this question a little bit on the more difficult side because
that was tough.
Someone who's never heard of, but
well, yeah, no winners. Ray Jarvis, okay, 1969. Ouch. All right. Well, hopefully this one's a little bit easier. Please repeat this week's trivia question.
So this week's trivia question, submit your answers to baseballshowpodcast at gmail.com, the Podomatic website at West Coast Bias Baseball, and or even at Facebook, a West Coast Bias Baseball podcast, who was the last pitcher to start 4 times in 9 days? Well, of course, it was probably before the era of the opener. Real starts where he went more than just one, two innings.
That's impressive. That's two. It's
a lot of pitching in a short amount of time. Who was the last pitcher to start that much in that short of time?
Now, is this in a league or this is just in any league?
In any league. In baseball.
Well, that'll do it for us for this week. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.